You're listening to a download from North Sound 2. Listen again.
On digital radio, online and on 10:35 a.m.
Stained Glass Radio. On North Sound 2.
Welcome to Stained Glass Radio for another Sunday night. I hope your weekend has been good and we'll do our best to round things off nicely for you with some great Christian contemporary music and a little bit of spiritual chit-chat towards the end of the show. And if you've been listening to North Sound 2's Stained Glass Radio for any length of time at all over the years, you're bound to have heard some of our guests who have had what are called near-death experiences, or NDEs. Well, our guest tonight had just such an experience. In 2009, she was rushed to hospital with pancreatitis. Now, this is acutely painful, but it's not usually fatal. However, something went very wrong with her anesthesia and she suffered complete respiratory failure. She closed her eyes on the hospital surroundings and opened them in a different place entirely. Don't miss Crystal McVeigh's account of what happened, as described in her book, Waking Up in Heaven, published by Howard Books.
On digital radio, online and on 10:35 a.m.
Stained Glass Radio. On North Sound 2.
Right now on the show, it's time to go for our thought for the week. And this week, it comes from the Reverend Douglas McNabb of Newmacher Parish Church.
Most people would agree that British society has become more secular than Christian over the last 50 years. Obviously, if you're a secular humanist, then this will be music to your ears. On the other hand, if you're a Christian, this might be causing you concern. Being Christian in a non-Christian society is not new to the Church of Jesus Christ. Indeed, the early church was born and developed in pagan, multicultural, polytheistic societies, and it thrived. So, rather than gnashing our teeth or burying our heads in the sand or throwing in the towel, maybe it's time for Christians in Britain to return to the basics of the early church. What was the early church like? Amongst other things, it was different from the society around it. Today we might call this being countercultural. It was prepared to discuss, debate with society, both explaining the ways in which the Christian lifestyle is a more fulfilling lifestyle than that worshipped by society, and by presenting itself as an attractive alternative. At its best, it was a community whose worship of God was sincere and relevant, whose joy in the Lord was evident even in the midst of sorrow and suffering. It was a community who enjoyed meeting together, sharing and caring, a community who did not shut itself off from the society in which it was placed, yet managed to avoid being subsumed by that society. Now, at times, the early church failed, much as the church throughout the ages has failed from time to time. But when the church has stood firmly on the Word of God, allowed God the Holy Spirit to have his way within her, and reached out confidently with the gospel and the love of God, God has done amazing things through her. So is this not a time for the Christian church, regardless of denominations, to act as one and engage with our society, challenging its misconceptions about God, his word, and his church? Challenging society in the love of God with the love of God, inviting it to reconsider the gospel and the hope contained therein. If you agree, maybe your first step should be to build up relationships with your secular friends, family members, and neighbours. They're far more likely to listen to someone they know and have come to trust.
On digital radio, online and on 10:35 a.m.
Stained Glass Radio. On North Sound 2. News from a Christian perspective. Stained Glass Radio News on North Sound 2.
Former Her Majesty's Inspector of Constabulary, Lord Deer, will lead a vote against the UK government's same-sex marriage bill on the 3rd of June. If he secures a majority, it will be the end of David Cameron's controversial bill to redefine marriage. In a letter to fellow peers, Lord Deer said, "The government is using its raw power to press ahead as fast as possible. The political parties have no mandate from the public to bring it forward. The redefinition of marriage was not included in any party manifesto. The official consultation process massaged the results to downplay opposition and has been widely dismissed as a sham. Lord Deer said the Lords have the authority to vote down a government bill when the executive is clearly acting with no democratic mandate and without regard to the proper constitutional processes. An abortion doctor convicted of killing three babies born alive at his rogue clinic dodged a possible death sentence on Tuesday in a hasty post-verdict deal with prosecutors. Dr. Kermit Gosnell waived his right to appeal in exchange for a sentence of life without parole. 72-year-old Gosnell was convicted on Monday of first-degree murder in a case that has become a flashpoint in America's abortion debate. Former clinic employees testified that Gosnell routinely performed illegal abortions past Pennsylvania's 24-week limit, that he delivered babies who were still moving, whimpering, or breathing, and that he and his assistants dispatched the newborns by snipping their spines, as he referred to it. Gosnell performed thousands of abortions in the last three decades at the clinic, which was dubbed a house of horrors by prosecutors. Prosecutors had been seeking the death penalty because Gosnell killed more than one person and his victims were especially vulnerable given their age. But Gosnell's own advanced age had made it unlikely he would ever be executed before his appeals ran out. The man known as America's Pastor was among those targeted by the Obama administration's Internal Revenue Service after the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association ran newspaper advertisements promoting traditional marriage and biblical values, according to a letter his son wrote to President Obama. Franklin Graham wrote in his letter and shared with Fox News, "I am bringing this to your attention because I believe that someone in the administration was targeting and attempting to intimidate us. This is morally wrong and unethical. Indeed, some would call it un-American." Graham is president of the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association, as well as the international charity Samaritan's Purse. Both organizations received word of audits on the same day, not long after they ran full-page ads supporting North Carolina's marriage amendment. The ads encouraged voters to cast their ballots for candidates who base their decisions on biblical principles and support the nation of Israel. Graham concluded his ad with the words, "Vote for biblical values this November the 6th and pray with me that America will remain one nation under God." Graham said that on September the 6th, 2012, they received notification that the IRS would audit their taxes. Graham wrote, "In light of what the IRS admitted to on Friday, May 10, 2013, and subsequent revelations from other sources, I do not believe that the IRS audit of our two organizations last year was a coincidence or justifiable." Mark DeMoss, a spokesman for Graham, told Fox News it was the first time the ministry had been audited in its history. The IRS eventually cleared both the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association and Samaritan's Purse, but Graham noted that the audit resulted in a waste of both taxpayers' and ministry's money. Good news concerning the U.S. pastor Saeed Abedini has followed his release from solitary confinement last week, as reports have suggested that global support he has been receiving while in prison in Tehran, Iran, is helping him find joy and peace. The American Center for Law and Justice said in a statement on Tuesday that despite his suffering, Pastor Saeed's faith continues to keep him alive. Other prisoners reportedly told Saeed's family that when Pastor Saeed was released from solitary confinement, he was glowing, and that miraculously he was filled with more joy and peace after solitary than he was before. The American pastor is said to be suffering from medical problems, including kidney issues, as he serves the 8-year sentence handed to him in January by the Iranian court for endangering national security. The ACLJ, which represents his wife and two children back in the U.S., has said that Abedini is being unfairly targeted for his Christian faith in the largely Muslim-dominated country, and that he is being denied the medical care he needs. When Abedini and other prisoners wrote a letter to prison officials complaining about his lack of care, they were punished with solitary confinement, forcing the U.S. pastor to spend his 33rd birthday last week in the small dark hole of solitary confinement. The latest update from the ACLJ reveals, however, that the international support has also served to encourage the pastor and other prisoners inside Evin Prison, which is considered one of the most brutal prisons in Iran. And finally, the new moderator of the Church of Scotland was mistaken for a jewel thief when she went to a ring fitting with a duplicate of a missing Kirk treasure. jewellery shop staff recognised the copy of the lost ring that Reverend Lorna Hood took in for adjustment and called the police. The original ring and a historic cross worn by the moderator on official duties were in a bag that went missing from Edinburgh Airport last month. The church is offering a four-figure sum of money for information leading to the safe return of the items. It never disclosed that it also had a duplicate of the ring. Shortly after Mrs. Hood and her aide left the shop, police called the church's head office in George Street, Edinburgh, to say that the missing ring had been taken to a jeweller's. Mrs. Hood said, "I thought my official photos as moderator might end up on Crime Watch or end up with a serial number in front of it. I was thinking how it must seem and conclusions that might be drawn. Two suspicious ladies walk into a shop. New moderator is international jewel thief." She wore the duplicate ring when she became the new moderator of the General Assembly of the Church of Scotland when it opened yesterday. The church still hopes the treasure that went missing in early April will be returned. Stained Glass Radio News. So let me get this straight. She walked into a jeweller's shop with a duplicate of a stolen ring and showed it to the jeweller, knowing that jeweller's shops all over the country would be alerted to look out for this ring. What made her think she wouldn't be arrested?
On digital radio, online and on 10:35 a.m.
Stained Glass Radio. On North Sound 2.
Well, Oklahoma teacher Crystal McVeigh had almost come to the point where she didn't believe in even the existence of God. She'd suffered a tough existence and been abused as a child and made several bad choices in her life that led to a lot of despair. And God seemed too far away to have any real meaning for her. And then on December 10th, 2009, she was taken to hospital with pancreatitis. Very painful, but not usually fatal. However, something went terribly wrong and she went into full respiratory arrest. Unconscious and unable to breathe, she was unaware of the fight going on around her to save her life. She now has no memory of losing consciousness, only of waking up in quite another place. Her book is called Waking Up in Heaven, published by Howard Books, and we're delighted to welcome Crystal McVeigh to the show this evening to talk about the night her life changed. Crystal, welcome to Stained Glass Radio.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Crystal, before you had this experience we're going to talk about, the subject of your book, Waking Up in Heaven, how did you view God? I mean, how religious a person were you?
So I had actually been in church from the time I was a small child. Yet I always say that church never came home with me.
Right.
When I often, as a child, when I left church, I came home to a drug-addicted stepfather who was very abusive to my mother. I questioned this God that they talked about in church because they had told me if I would accept him, he would save me. And as a small child, I stood in church and I asked Jesus Christ to come into my heart and to save me. And as a child, I thought that that meant that he would save me from what I was living in.
Mm-hmm.
And years would go by, and I was still living in the same dysfunction. I was sexually abused from the time I was 3 until I was 12.
Yeah.
And I had a fear of this God, because at the age of 12, I decided I had two options. Either he was real, and he didn't love me for some reason, because he wasn't saving me, or two, he wasn't real. And I really did not have a definite answer until the day I died.
Well, many people draw that conclusion, don't they, about God? I mean, if they don't get an immediate answer to prayer, they very often see him as uncaring. And, of course, we have an enemy who makes
very
capital
much
out of that. He loves that sort of thing, and he gets people to believe that. I mean,
yes.
Did you ever think about the afterlife? What did you think it might be like?
So, you know, as a child, I listened to the stories of the angels, and I will be quite honest with you. In my teenage years, I always say that what happens to you as a child molds you into who you become. And so as a teenager, I became quite rebellious. It was the rebellion and the fear and the secrets and the shame that I had carried from my childhood that eventually led me into the clinic of an abortion clinic.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked out of that clinic with more shame, more secrets. And I truly believed at that point that if God was real, he would never love me and never forgive me. And I lived that way through my entire 20s, through failed marriage, two children, a single mom.
And it led to deep, deep feelings of worthlessness, didn't it, really?
I mean, very much so.
You took pills at one stage. You tried to commit suicide, didn't you?
I did when I was a very young teenager, about the age of 13. Although I didn't see God working in my life at the time, I also didn't see what you were just talking about, that there is a very real enemy who Jesus tells us in the Bible that he comes to kill, steal, and destroy.
Yeah. So what happened then, back that day, back in 2009, when your life all changed? December the 10th, 2009, to be exact, you were rushed to hospital. You had stomach pains. Tell us about it.
I did. I had had a routine procedure, which a complication from that I developed was pancreatitis. So they put me in the hospital for that, for the pancreatitis. I was just going to be medicated and kept in the hospital until I started feeling better. My body got too much medication, and it stopped my breathing, which was stopping my heart. What I remember that morning, besides being in so much pain, I remember my mom sitting in the room with me, and I remember closing my eyes, almost as if I was falling asleep. There was no sense of panic. There was no pain. And I closed my eyes, and as I closed my eyes on earth, instantly I opened them again, almost as if I was just blinking. And yet when I opened them, I woke up in heaven, this place that I had questioned if it existed my entire life.
And how did you feel? I mean, you were suffering intense physical trauma just seconds before. How did you feel when you wakened up in heaven?
Well, the moment I woke up, I became aware of several things all in an instant. One, I tell people, the thing that surprised me the most about heaven was that nothing surprised me. I recognized this place. I say in my book, the first person I met in heaven was myself, because I stood in the most perfect form of my spirit, which God created. I knew that I was the same me that had just existed on earth and passed away, but I knew that I was the same me, the real me that God had created. I had two angels standing to my left that I recognized instantly, but not as humans that I had known on this earth, and we began to communicate with no words. And then I turned to my right, and what I was standing in was a tunnel, and the tunnel itself was made of light. And on the sides of the tunnel, there was no beginning, no end. And as I turned to my right, the light took on a slightly different feel. And as I turned to my right, I stood in front of this immense and intense and vivid brightness. And instantly, I fell to my knees in front of him. And I knew, without even having to ask, that I was standing in front of God. And people will say, what did he look like? All I saw was the light. But it was more than a light that I could see. I felt it. I heard him. And I fell in front of him, this God that I had questioned my whole life. And I lifted my hands, and I said, why didn't I do more for you? Because in that instant, I didn't meet God. I recognized him.
You knew that this was God?
There was no question.
The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, that you had been in church and you had prayed to.
Yes, and he was not a punishing God. I say that God didn't only just show me that he loved me, he was love. Mm-hmm. And I have never felt that intensity for anything in my life. And I remember in my 20s being in church and hearing the pastor say that we had to love God above all else. And I remember thinking, if you're real, I would never love you more than my children. And at this point, I had four children, two young teenagers and two 10-month-old twins. And God showed me my children. And he also showed me that the plan for their life was perfect, just as all of our life plans are perfect. That does not mean that there will not be suffering or pain or things that we don't understand, but God showed me that he uses everything for the good of his kingdom. And he showed me my four children, and he gave me a choice to come back to them and to be their mother or to stay with him. And for the very first time in my life, I chose him.
You chose God. Yeah. You know, what you're saying is it's remarkable, actually. We've had guests on the show, including a lady called Dr. Mary Neal, who died in a canoeing accident. And she said so many. She came back, obviously, to life afterwards, but she went to heaven. And she said some of the exact same things that you're telling us now. Yeah. She said that it wasn't necessary to use words to speak to people. You felt to speak to the angels, for example. You felt them communicating with you. It was a case of feeling what they were saying rather than anything else. She felt she knew these beings, although in Mary's case, she said, I knew these beings and I couldn't understand why I knew them. And she said, given more time, she said, I would have wanted, I had questions, she said, I was going to ask them. But there seemed to be more urgent things to do. And she didn't get the chance to do that. But she said, I knew these people immediately. She said, although she couldn't, she didn't know who they were, but she later called them, I think she called them in her book later, she called them angels. So she said that. She also said something about time, which was interesting.
There was no time. So people will say, well, you had 9 minutes, but I read a book by Don Piper, and he
90 minutes in heaven.
90 minutes in heaven.
Yeah.
And as I read it, I was telling my husband, you know, we had just as much happen. There was no urgency. There was no sense of time, seconds. And at one point, when I fast forward to when I was getting ready to leave heaven, not only did God give me the choice once to stay with him, and he did introduce me to a beautiful person in heaven that changed me down to my core, which I know and I share in my book was the whole reason that God pulled me to the gates of heaven. And at one point, I did see the gates of heaven, and he said, when we get there, you cannot come back. And I was fully aware that I was not going to come back to my life here. He introduced me to this person, which I said just changed everything about my existence. And after that, as we continued to walk to the gates of heaven, my angels and God and myself, and speaking the entire time, I heard my mother cry my name. And I remember stopping, and I looked into this light, and I said, can I go tell her that I'm okay? And for the second time, he gave me a choice. And he said, the choice is up to you. And as I turned to go and find where her voice was coming from, he said, tell them what you can remember. And I remember telling him, I'll remember everything, and I'll be right back.
Yes.
And unfortunately, when I did come back, I only remembered four things specifically that God spoke to me. But he spoke to me the entire time.
Well, you know, there's a record in the scriptures, isn't there, of the Apostle Paul, who said that he went to heaven at one point, and he talks in the third person, but he it's obviously applying to him. And he said that there are some things that he saw, he said, that weren't lawful for him to repeat. So perhaps that's why the Lord said to you, tell them what you can remember. In other words, you'll only be allowed to remember certain things.
Right, and I did find in seeing other people that have had the same experience that they describe, you know, we come back and we struggle to find human words because even the words beautiful, gorgeous, amazing, they're so nothing compared to what it really was like.
That's exactly what we also spoke to Don Piper some years ago, and Don said exactly the same thing. He said he would struggle to remember to have words to say to describe what he saw in heaven. He said he couldn't possibly. He said there just weren't words in the English language. Tell us about the way that you felt, though. I mean, Don Piper, for example, said he felt more alive than he had ever felt in his life. Was that the case with you?
I say that. Yes, I say that in my book. I say that I was more alive in those 9 minutes than I have ever been on this earth. The other thing was that my spirit was totally free. There was nothing negative whatsoever in this realm. You're standing in front of and I only saw his presence, so I cannot imagine what it's going to be like to be in his arms one day.
Sure.
People will say to me, you didn't see Jesus. And I tell them, yes, I did see him. What I saw was the presence of God, the one true God. And I could not distinguish between God and the Son and the Holy Spirit. They were all one, and it was the one that I was standing in front of. And so actually, when they did CPR and they brought me back, now I chose to come back to tell my mother that I was okay. And then they kept working on me and doing CPR. And every time I would open my eyes in the hospital room, I'd ask them, please stop. And I would tell them, I want to go back. And I was very upset when I knew that I couldn't get back to heaven.
That's exactly what, again, this is exactly, so many common factors between you and other people that we've spoken to on Stained Glass Radio. Dr. Mary Neal said exactly the same thing. She said she was on her way to glory. She was being accompanied by these spirit creatures. And all the time, she said, she had people trying to bring her back to life. She had people on the bank, on the riverbank, giving her CPR, trying to resuscitate her and saying, come on, breathe, breathe. And she felt incredibly annoyed with these people. annoyed with them.
I was very, very sad. But I will tell you. So, and I'll give this away, but I still want you to read the book so that I can give so much more details.
Of course.
You know, as I was walking with my angels and God towards the gates of heaven, I saw a small child in front of me. And I said, as a teenager, I'd had an abortion. But I saw this small little girl in front of me, and she was different than the angels. She was fully human. The angels had so much glory and light shining off of them that it was very hard for me to distinguish features. But she was different. She was human. And I described the little dress that she was wearing, and it was a white frilly dress with little bits of yellow, and the yellow would prism in his light all around me. And she had this little basket, and she would dip it in the light and pour it out and laugh. And as she laughed, my soul began to swell. You know that expression when you say, I swelled with love, I swelled with pride. That's what my soul was doing. And I remember watching her and thinking, I could watch her laugh for eternity. I mean, I had so much joy coming from this child. I've never loved like I loved this child. And at one point, she laughed, and my soul swelled, filled with this love. And I remember thinking, I'm going to explode, because I could not contain all of the love that was in my soul, my spirit. And right before I felt like I was literally going to bust like a balloon, God took it from me. And when I say that, it was almost as if I had been looking through glasses, and he took them off of my eyes. And as I looked back down at her, I recognized her as me when I was 3 years old, when the sexual abuse began in my life, when the enemy told me I was worthless, that God did not love me, that he had abandoned me. And God allowed me to see myself through his eyes.
Right.
And he took me back to the moment that the lie began, and he freed me with the truth. And I tell people, if God's love was every grain of sand on this earth, he gave me one grain, and it almost destroyed me.
And
because even as a spirit, we cannot contain his love.
He showed you how much he loved you at a time that you believed that he didn't love you at all.
Absolutely. That's where it all started.
Yeah.
It all started with that evil that was brought into my life. And that moment from 3 years old shaped my worth for the rest of my life.
Crystal, how did you start to tell people about this after the event, after you came back and found yourself in the hospital bed? I mean, how soon did you start telling people where you'd just been?
Immediately. I opened my eyes in the hospital. There was 10 or 15 doctors and nurses in there yelling in my face. Did I know where I was? What was my name? I knew exactly where I had been and where I was, but it took me a moment to remember how to talk, because I had just come from a place where communication was effort. You know, I had no effort in trying to communicate. And as soon as I was able to utter a word, I said, I am with God. I am in heaven. And I kept telling them, just let me go back. And I would close my eyes, and I would try to get back out, and I would feel like I was almost back to God, and they'd pull me back. and I would beg them, please stop.
Yeah.
Within days, I was put in ICU for days after they brought me back and highly drugged and medicated. But I began within days telling the nurses, the doctors, my family what I had seen.
And how has the experience changed you, Crystal?
Oh, gosh, it's changed everything about me. It changed my past, which is so funny for when I say that, you know, nothing you think could change our past, but it did. He took me back to that moment and showed me that all of those years I believed that he was punishing and was mad or didn't love me. It was all a lie. He changed my existence on this earth. Things that used to matter to me just don't really matter anymore. And I just want people to know that he's real and that there's nothing that we can do that he can't forgive.
Well, the scriptures say that nothing can separate us from the love of God. And certainly if, you know, the experience that you've had has obviously changed your whole perspective of life. And only now can you see the big picture. And
exactly.
That's encouragement for all of us. That's the reason that sometimes we get so down. We can't see the big picture. We can never hope in this life to see see things from God's perspective. My thoughts are not your thoughts is what God says in the scripture, and it's so true. Crystal, your book describes many experiences you've had since the experience in hospital when you died and went to the Lord, and it's a fascinating read. And I'll give the details of it out again later on in the show, but I'd love to talk to you some more about it, but right out of time for the moment. But it's a wonderful book. I know that your book is going to be an encouragement to anyone for whom God seems far away at times. Crystal McVeigh, author of Waking Up in Heaven, and it's published by Howard Books. Thanks so much for joining us this evening and sharing with us an amazing experience which has brought comfort to so many people. And I know it will for many more people too. Thank you. Thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Thank you so much and God bless.
On digital radio, online and on 10:35 a.m.
Stained Glass Radio on North Sound 2.
And our thanks tonight go to Crystal McVeigh for joining us tonight on the line from Oklahoma, talking about her amazing near-death experience. Waking Up in Heaven is the title of her book, published by Howard Books. And it's the What's On information in association with the Aberdeen Christian Diary on the web at www.the-abcd.org.uk. And tomorrow, Monday the 20th through until Friday the 31st, sitting at the feet of Jesus, LL Scotland, Blairmore House, Glass Huntley, AB54 4XH, teaching on how to combat stress and burnout. Give me some of that. By focusing on the fundamental principles of biblical meditation, it says. Led by Andreas Hefti of LL Germany, and the contact is LL Ministries 01466 799102 or email bookings at scotland.ll.org.uk. Tuesday the 21st, and it's Freedom in Christ. It's an event from 7:30 until 9:30 p.m. at Deeside Christian Fellowship Church, Bing Hill Drive, Milltimber, AB130JE. It's an opportunity to hear about a strategy for church-wide discipleship. This two-hour event will outline three key concepts for developing a church-wide discipleship strategy and introduce people to the core tools of Freedom in Christ Ministries. It says it's a free event, but please register on the FIC website, and it's at www.ficm.org.uk. Or contact Ruth McHardy on telephone number 01224 733979. Wednesday the 22nd, and there's an opportunity to pray for Aberdeen Business Matters, 12:30 until 1:30 p.m. at Rubus Law Church Centre, 1 Beaconsfield Place, Aberdeen, AB15 4AB. A lunchtime meeting to discuss and pray for a new initiative to help Christians engage with the business community in Aberdeen. For more information or to indicate that you plan to attend, contact Martin Link on email address martinlink, it's Martin with a Y, at gmail.com, or on the mobile 07506 188 156 or telephone number 01224 373 115. And of Friday the 24th, there's the relevance of Israel to the church today. That's at 7:30 p.m. CLC Bookshop, Credo Centre, 14 to 20 John Street, Aberdeen, AB25 1BT. It's an illustrated talk by David Silver, out of Zion Ministries, Mount Carmel, Israel. To reserve a seat, contact Neil, telephone number 01224 641 620 or email aberdeen at cfcbookshops.com. And a couple of emails that have come in from our friends at Torrey St. Fiddick's Parish Church. There's a monthly coffee morning on Saturday, May 25th from 10 a.m. until 12 noon. Various stalls including bric-a-brac, home bakes and preserves, books, CDs, tapes, DVDs, videos, handcrafted goods and cards, and many more items. Come on over, it says, for a real Torrey welcome. Many thanks again from the monthly gang. Any queries, please call Mary 01224 874735. 874735. And there's a silent auction too there at Torrey St. Fiddick's Parish Church on May 24th, 2013. Viewing from 6 p.m. Sale starts at 7 p.m. Teas and coffees are available. And food, it says. How can you refuse that? Friday, May 24th, 2013, Torrey St. Fiddick's Parish Church, 6 p.m. for 7 p.m. That's it for the What's On information. Anything you'd like us to tell everybody about, then it's Stained Glass Radio at northsound2.com. And that wraps it up for the show tonight. Don't miss next week, as we invariably say these days. Fascinating guest, Robbie Dawkins. And he says that the church today should be doing exactly the things that Jesus did when he was on earth. And that includes healing the sick, casting out demons, and raising the dead. Don't miss it next week on Stained Glass Radio, North Sound 2.
Listen again to what you've missed and access exclusive online-only content at northsound2.com.